On a Falcons Wednesday live from Flowery Branch, Rick Kamla and John Michaels at your service. And let's go Hawks. A little win last night at home against the Wizards. I think Buckhead Flew might have had a little something to do with that W. I think a big assist from the Buckhead Flew. Hi. Anyway,
people
good morning.
Christmas shopping. That's all that was. Little Christmas. Not gift carding like Mark Owens, but they were actually getting some gifts.
So Dwight Howard was interviewed, and I believe it was before the game. And said, you know, I'm recovering from back surgery and just trying to get my mind right and get my spirit right and, and take us to the championship. Dwight, it's called the finals.
Yeah.
First of all,
you don't know what it's called.
Well, he's been there once, he's so far from winning a ring, which is never going to happen, that he doesn't even know the name of. It'd be like saying in football, you know, I want to make it to the title game. No, it's the Super Bowl, dude. Come on. Anyway, dude, we're going to talk a ton of football today. I just had to take a provoked shot at Dwight Howard. I think it's very provoked. But Dwight talking about a championship is one of the most ironic things I've ever heard. Mm-hmm. But we've got all kinds of football to talk about here today, John. So we get off the air on Monday. The Justin Fields news starts popping. All kinds of developments coming out since. So a lot has changed since we did our last show together Monday, ending at 2 p.m.
Yeah, Randy and I spent a lot of time talking about the Justin Fields of it all yesterday. We'll continue to get into that today. Today is early signing day in college football. Georgia's already flipped a kid from Ohio State. They've got a nice class shaping up early. Obviously, this isn't the final day of signing. You still go all the way to that first Wednesday or second Wednesday, whatever it is, first Wednesday in February. So you've got some time before you finish out your class. But a lot of the top name kids now are signing today, making their college choices known, shutting all this down so you get a good idea what's going on. We also got some Falcons news we're going to get into today. Pro Football Talk had an article yesterday. I know Mike and Carl were talking about it after we went off the air, that there's a possibility that both the coordinators here in Atlanta could be let go. And the name that they threw out for offensive coordinator, I have no interest in.
I completely agree.
Yeah, none.
Completely
zero
agree.
Interest in that.
Damn.
But
I wish we disagreed, but we don't.
Okay, you have interest in him. I'll take interest in him.
All right, preacher man. So we got to set it up like Stephen A. and Skip Bayless, right? One of us has to be on one side, whether we believe it or not.
Right.
who's going guns blazing, and who's on the other side of this thing?
I'll go guns blazing.
Yeah, I was going to say, Johnny can go guns blazing.
I have minimal voice today, so.
I do too, as a matter of fact. Let me tell you this right now. I don't think Marquand Manuel is going anywhere.
Me neither.
I do not think Marquand Manuel is going anywhere. Now, that doesn't mean that that Dan Quinn might not take play calling duties or maybe a reshuffling or something like that. He's 1 year on the job, and your defense was gutted. Mm-hmm. And so, no. And granted, so you're just going to give him a pass? Well, kind of.
Yeah.
I mean, Jarrett was hurt. Tack was hurt. Deion Jones was hurt. Obviously, Rico Allen and Keanu. I'm sorry. You can't gut a defense like that and hold that defense to the same high standards that you had coming into the season. Mm-hmm. To me, he gets another look. The thing with Sark, John, it's year two, okay? So it's been 2 years. We gave you a second chance.
Well, this is year two for Marquand as well.
Is the D.C.?
Yeah, he was the D.C. last year.
I'm sorry. I'm out of my mind with that little
bit. But this year, as you mentioned, he has had everything gutted from. So he had 1 year full strength.
Right.
And you had the defense right on the cusp of being a top 10 defense. Mm-hmm. And then this year, you obviously fall back to the pack with a lot of injuries.
Yeah, sorry, I'm tripping. I thought it was 1 year as D.C. for Marquand. But two for Sark. The guy you're talking about, Darren Bevell of the Seattle Seahawks. Darren Bevell lost a Super Bowl at the goal line. Okay, the famous play where you should have run Marshawn Lynch, who got you there, Darrell Bevell. The famous play or infamous play, Marshawn Lynch gets you to the 1 yard line, and then you run a stupid quick slant over the middle, tipped up, intercepted ball game. Pats win the Super Bowl, and you suck on it. You saw Tom Brady on the sideline for that game, like, oh my God, we just won. Like, he thought they lost the game. He already had begun the mourning process of the L, and Darrell Bevell gave them a championship, not unlike we did a couple of years ago. But I do not want Darrell Bevell as the offensive coordinator.
No, I don't particularly either.
Are you ready to run the ball 60% of the time?
If we run it better than we do right now, I don't mind running the football. The problem
with Sanu and Ridley and Julio and Ryan and no. We don't need like a run first guy coming in here. Is Darrell Bevell the current Seattle, or is he out of a job?
No, he got fired in Seattle, if I'm not mistaken.
So yeah, no.
No, I'm good on that.
I'd rather go to the college ranks. I'd rather go get somebody's quarterback's coach, get some hotshot offenses, play caller and play designer. John, I need creativity.
Yeah, Daryl Bevel, maybe he is still the OC there. I don't know. I have to go back and look. I thought he was gone in Seattle.
I thought he was gone, too. But anyway, I don't want him.
No, he was gone. 2017 was his last year.
I don't feel good about Sark's future here. I really don't.
Yeah, me.
I don't feel it. And God bless him. John and I have not been, like, hard banging on get Sark out of here, get Sark out of here. I think there have been times, John, where we've nitpicked on some stuff that he has done, and rightly so. We keep it fair and real here. But there have been some other games where his play calling has been really, really good. The thing is, it's choppy. It's inconsistent. Right. And I think they're going to make a move there.
Preacher Man, how you doing this morning?
I'm good. I'm not stuck in a tube today, so it's all good.
How did that go? You had the MRI yesterday.
Yeah, that's a new experience for me. I'd rather never do that again. It was an hour and 10 minutes of not being able to move in an enclosed
hour
space.
And 10 minutes? Yeah. 70 minutes of I'd get claustrophobic as hell.
You've never had an MRI?
I have, but I wasn't in for that long.
Yeah, I walked in there because Johnny goes, it takes about 45 minutes. So in my head, I'm like, okay, 45 minutes.
Why did it take so long?
That's just how long it took.
I think they were racking up billable hours on you, bro.
Well, that's fine. They're not my billable, so it's all good. But
that's why we have insurance, right?
Exactly. So I just close the eyes and focus on breathing, and that's pretty much how I made it through the day. But yeah, I would not want to do that again.
So you had an MRI on your back.
Yeah.
Well, I hope you get some good news, dude.
Hopefully.
Hope you get some good news. Well, is Mark Owens back in the Kia Studios, or does he have the rest of 2018 off?
I wish.
Mo, what's up, dude? Good morning.
If I could play it my way. Hey, you know, in 48 hours, Dog Nation went from losing the number one dual threat quarterback in the country to signing the number two dual threat quarterback in the country.
Pretty good. Are you feeling some kind of way about Justin Fields leaving?
No, I get it. I mean, selfishly, I hate it, because he's a great quarterback and a damn good dog in Hoya Hoya Saxa. But I get it. He wants to play. It's a competition, and Fromm beat him out for the competition. I don't mind. I don't want to play against him, but I don't mind it. Good for him. Go make that money. That's what's up.
What the f*** is going on?
The sports world never stops. So if you missed anything, Rick and John are here to tell you what's up.
What's up, Holmes?
We added Jeremy Langford. We brought him up. And Brian Hill will certainly, get some more chances into Ito's role. But we're really fortunate that Tevin, is really hitting his stride as well. And I was really pumped for his performance last week.
That's Dan Quinn, and he's talking about Ito Smith being out and what they've done to change the running back position. This is a two-game, basically audition for Brian Hill. What can you do? Because Randy and I were talking about this yesterday, Rick. Just say you have to move on from Tevin Coleman, and I think we all agree that that's probably what's going to happen. You then have two backs that are very similar. Devontae Freeman and Ito Smith are kind of water bug backs. They're boop, 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 kind of shaking and baking in the backfield, and they're going to make you miss and do all of that. You don't necessarily have a downhill runner. That's what Brian Hill was brought here for. Can Brian Hill become that guy these next 2 weeks? I don't know. Or are you looking in the draft to find somebody like that in the later rounds?
So you appreciate Rodney Anderson of Oklahoma. I appreciate Rodney Anderson of Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. Would he look good in a Falcons uniform?
If he's healthy.
He has had three seasons in college cut short by injuries. It was a neck injury, a broken leg, and this year a torn ACL. However, he must be bionic, John. I'm just saying, I think you would get him late in the draft, maybe even, I think mid-rounds, late in the draft, I don't know. But he could be that downhill runner. Jeremy Langford, who was promoted, guys and girls, here's the some details on him. Michigan State player, 28 games for the Bears from 2015 to 2016, 737 yards and 10 touchdowns, also caught 41 balls. He's a pretty good back. Mm-hmm. Essentially, Jordan Howard forced him out of Chicago. And so I'm okay with Jeremy Langford getting a little bit of a look. He talked about Brian Hill getting some more time as well. But I think they're really going to try as best they can, John, to feature Tevin Coleman and give him a full load or near a full load here the next two games.
Elsewhere, congratulations. Grady Jarrett picks up NFC Defensive Player of the Week for his game against Arizona over the weekend. 7 tackles, 2 sacks, and a forced fumble. Second Falcon to win the award. Earlier on this year. Elsewhere, Pro Bowl rosters were announced as well. 2 Atlanta Falcons were chosen. Julio Jones gets the nod, and Alex Mack gets the nod. I think they have a case for 2 other guys that should have been in the Pro Bowl. DeMonte Casey tied for the league lead in interceptions. Probably should have got in. And Matt Ryan, when you look at Jared Goff's numbers, Matt Ryan has much better numbers than Jared Goff has had this year. You could argue he's had better numbers than Drew Brees. I know Brees is on a better team, and his numbers are at minimum on par with Aaron Rodgers, who's on a similarly bad team as well.
Well, don't get in your feelings about the Jared Goff thing, because the Pro Bowl awards winners, mm-hmm. right? And Jared Goff doesn't have as good a stats as Matt Ryan, clearly. However, Matt Ryan's team is 5-9. And Jared Goff's team is at the top of the NFC standings, or near the top. And so it's as simple as that. So don't be mad about that. Now, if you want to be mad about Aaron Rodgers making the Pro Bowl over Matt Ryan, knock yourself out. That is a reputation nod for Aaron Rodgers in obviously a non-Pro Bowl season. Mm-hmm. The voters, they're just looking at stats. They're just looking at resume and body of work. Because if you've watched Aaron Rodgers this year, he has missed more throws this year than I think in the rest of his year combined. He's been dreadful by his high standards. So I do believe that Matt Ryan got snubbed. And Aaron Rodgers, his team's not 10-4.
Right.
Like, they're right kind of just right above the Falcons. So I agree with that snub. Grady Jarrett got snubbed essentially mm-hmm. for Akeem Hicks of the Bears.
Right.
Because he's not going to make it over Aaron Donald or Fletcher Cox. So I'm okay with that. Hicks and Jarrett, very similar numbers.
Yep.
Hicks is on a Bears team, which has been, one of the best defenses in the league. And Casey doesn't make it over Eddie Jackson, another Chicago Bear,
right.
who, and it's the splash plays, John. It's the returns for touchdown. Eddie Jackson just had the interception that ended the Packers game.
Right.
He's a splash play guy and a stud. Harrison Smith was the other guy that made it over Casey. I'm okay with Casey and Jarrett not making it. I really am. The way it stacks up with the competitors, the Matt Ryan thing, we do have beef with that.
Elsewhere, Justin Fields, and we talked about this a lot yesterday, it is official. He is in the NCAA transfer portal. That happened late yesterday afternoon. He is going to transfer from the University of Georgia. Conversely, they have flipped the number two dual threat quarterback in the country. He is now signing with the University of Georgia instead of Ohio State. Everybody's kind of pointing to Fields is going to end up at Ohio State. Some have said Oklahoma, but Oklahoma's already inked the number one quarterback in the country today, a kid by the name of Spencer Rattler.
Do we need to know that name for college football fantasy next year?
Maybe, because I'm not sure who Kyler Murray's backup was.
John, I want to ask you quickly, give us that development that happened at Athens that is going to cause the NCAA to maybe, grant his appeal.
We talked about this some yesterday, but there was an issue with a baseball player using racial slurs during a game. The baseball player was kicked off the University of Georgia team. Justin Fields, it was public months ago, but there is a clause in there that basically said if a student athlete feels unsafe at the location that he's at, he can grant for a hardship transfer. You can guarantee Justin Fields, if he's trying to play next year, they're going to use that. And the NCAA, I believe, will grant it.
I agree. If Shea Patterson got his appeal, mm-hmm. I believe that Justin Fields is going to get his appeal, and he will be a Buckeye next year.
What did Dan Quinn have to say about the future of Devontae Freeman for the rest of this year? You'll hear it next as he sat down with John and John this morning as she was on vacation. That's next live here from Flowery Branch on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and 92.9thegame.com.
Michael's on a Falcons Wednesday live from Flowery Branch Falcons headquarters, and it is a Wednesday tradition here on the home of the Falcons, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. John and Hugh, and this morning, John Fricke and John Chuckery caught up with Dan Quinn, and they started by asking him, hey, what's the difference in Vic Beasley these last couple of weeks?
Yeah, and that's definitely something that we count on from him, you know, because of the speed off the edge. But like most things, it works in concert together. You know, when we play better as a unit, you know, everybody benefits from that. And I think on Sunday, that was a good example of that. You know, there was a big push on sacks. Well, a lot of times the sacks comes from really good coverage down the field. And quite often on the other side, you know, when those happen, that's, you know, two groups working in concert together. So I've been pleased with his practice, you know, performances in terms of preparation and getting ready. And that definitely carried over onto the field. But he is in a good space and healthy, fresh, and you know, ready to go after it again this week.
Of course, Vic, one of the guys that he got his hands on that ball that led to the Deion Jones interception, which sort of turned the momentum there in the first quarter, let you score 40 points in a row. What was it like for you, Coach, to have kind of a, for the first time in a long time, sort of a low-stress Sunday?
Well, I thought the number one thing was, you know, playing closer to our identity. So much felt in the style and attitude we like to play, being able to run the ball, stopping the run, affecting the quarterback, and creating turnovers, that was you know, you've heard me, you know, talk about that and that attitude and that style. And so to capture that and to put that on display for, you know, for the team to see, for the fans to see, I thought that was really important.
I know that you're still in the throes of this season, but Hugh and I were talking about this the other day, and I'm kind of curious, Coach Quinn, you know, the way you finished this season, is that not just to finish this season on a more positive note, but is that a carryover into next year? Does it have that kind of effect?
Well, we don't look too far ahead, John, you know that. But what we do know is that you better take the lessons, you know, that you've gone through to learn. And I think that's where a team can really make good strides. Most of the good teams that I've been on, you know, the lessons were learned, you know, a year before, a season before, and they were applied into that next year. And so although the team will be different, each team's made up of different guys and the chemistry's different, but I do think the lessons can carry over, you know, for a group. And I certainly hope that to be the case this year. I love the preparation and now the fight to carry that and the focus to carry that into the game, you know, I thought was a real important step. But back to the NFC South, man, and, you know, just it's fun playing the division games. It really is.
Coach Dan Quinn joins us here on the WaitFor.com hotline. Coach, with this team out of the playoffs, and I know you say you don't want to look too far ahead, but how do you kind of balance playing time and things like that for guys who maybe aren't injured, but obviously at this time of the year you have a lot of guys that just have a beat-up factor to them. And without having a playoff chase, how do you kind of manage plays or playing time and things like that for guys to try to obviously not just keep them healthy for the rest of the season, but having to start thinking a little bit about next year?
Yeah, and we're fortunate that way that John, we use so much of our injuries up in the preseason and the early start of the regular season that we're pretty healthy right now. So the guys are doing a good job when what we look for in practice, you know, the speeds and the technique and all those things. So if the guys are hitting those marks, then we know we're really getting ready to play. But that's our responsibility to make sure the guys are good and ready. And we're always going to, you know, make the best decisions by them. But by no stretch, you know, we're looking to back off in any way either.
All right, so we're talking about that with Coach Quinn about the team going into Carolina. Since you're on the subject, why don't you, if you could, Coach, tell us what the status is. We know that Ito Smith is now out and Devontae Freeman looks like he's not coming back. How is the team?
Yeah, so we know where we're at. So let's talk with Free first. So he won't make it back in the next, you know, couple weeks. We're always keeping that option available with him to return, you know, depending on, you know, how we finished and where we'd go. But now that we have a sense in that he wouldn't make it back, you know, in the next, you know, few days to get the practice reps needed to play, he won't make it back. And then with Ito Smith, he'll go on IR. That happened, and we added Jeremy Langford. We brought him up, and Brian Hill will certainly, you know, get some more chances into Ito's role. But we're really fortunate that Tevin, you know, is really hitting his stride as well, and I was really pumped for his performance last week from a health standpoint. We're heading into practice doing pretty well. The only guy that, you know, is not going to get a full amount of work today would be Julio. But past that, we're in pretty good shape.
Coach, I'm curious, as obviously getting close to ending your fourth year here as a head coach in the league, self-evaluate a little bit for me. What do you think you've done better as a coach now in your fourth year, and what are the areas that you still think you're trying to improve on as a head coach?
Well, I think there's always areas to improve, and I think that's kind of the fun part about the job is that there's always things to tweak, and how do you do it better? You know, from, you know, the top down, from leading and meetings and practice habits and game management and all the things that go into, you know, helping build a roster, you know, with Thomas. So those are things I think you're always trying to do it better than it's been done before. So you're trying to look for, you know, a small tweak or an edge. Our philosophy to how we want to do it stays consistent in the style that we want to play, our identity. But the small tweaks that you can certainly improve upon as you're going. I think your first year as a head coach is probably the most difficult one, balancing, you know, the roster decisions and actives and inactives and things that you haven't done before, you know, dealing with officials and dealing with the fine media members such as yourself on an everyday basis. Those are things early on that take up some of your space that maybe you don't do as a coordinator. But I think you're always growing in the role, and that's why in this head coaching role, it's challenging, it's fun, it's, you know, pushes you to your limits, but at the same time, you feel like you're always working to get better and improve, and that part of it, I absolutely love it.
Two games to go with head coach Dan Quinn joining us on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Both of those games on the road, and coach both against division rivals. Carolina Panthers, always a little extra incentive against Cam and Carolina, isn't there?
There is, and I'm hopeful that we'll see those fans travel up 85 like we've seen on some of the road games this year, because
that's a really cool thing to share that experience on the road with them. And we're just pumped and looking forward to it. So, yes, the NFC South games, the longer you're in it, the stronger that rivalry gets. And so for me, and now in my fourth year and having more chances and more opportunities against them, it certainly fuels the fire stronger for men like yourself that have been through the rivalry for a long time. You know, you have to be in it a few years to really appreciate it, and I certainly do.
John and I were talking this morning a little bit about Christian McCaffrey and the player he's become, and we saw what he did and how effective he was coming out of the backfield against you in the first meeting this year, and then last week became, I believe, the first player in NFL history to have 50 yards rushing, receiving, and passing in the same game in a number of years, like a decade or something. He is he actually almost the focal point of how you scheme against them now to kind of take him out of the mix?
You better, because he's their leading rusher and he's their leading receiver. I got a lot of respect for him, John. He plays every snap at running back, which is not easy to do in today's NFL with you know, all the ways that guys get featured and utilized. But when he gets out in space, that's really when he's at his best. You'll see him you know, on a swing screen. You'll see him out of the backfield. And when he can get matched up on a player, he can really break them off, you know, by his change of direction. And then same thing in the run game. When they can get him on the edge and get him on the perimeter, he's a real factor. So Carolina's speed is evident. You know, you see it at wide receiver. You see it at running back. You see it at quarterback. And so their run game is a full complement because it's not just him. It's him and quarterback and wide receiver. So it's a complete package. You've got to defend the whole team in the run. And you know, that's where our focus and preparation will be for this week.
To piggyback, Coach, from a layman's 30,000-foot view, Carolina doesn't look like the same team since Cam Newton really took that beat-up factor against the Pittsburgh Steelers, and they've been on an 0-6 run since then. Now, I know, obviously, hitting the quarterback is as important as anything in this league, but how much more, when you have a quarterback that looks like he's not playing healthy, how much more important does it become to try to really disrupt his life and try to force him to do some things he may not physically want to do right now?
Well, every week it's that way, John. And the reason why, you know, if you can get the quarterback to move and the completion percentages can change, if you can what we would call move the guy off the spot. And sometimes those are hits. Sometimes those are, you know, getting the guy to have to scramble before he's ready to or just really adjust in the pocket, you know, before the timing of the receiver and the quarterback is on point. So for a long time, he's difficult to defend because he's got designed quarterback runs. We see a lot of teams that have options for the quarterback. Okay, if I'm going to get hit, I'll hand it off, but it's really, you know, an option for him to give it or throw it like a RPO or a zone read. What makes Carolina different is they have designed quarterback runs. No matter what, he'll carry it. And I think that makes a big difference. So it's the size and strength that he has for sure, but they do have both, you know, quarterback runs, option runs, and then the ability for him to throw it on the move. So he's an excellent competitor and, you know, one we faced through the years, and we're definitely looking forward to it. This matchup, two tough teams, and we know all about tough stretches as well. And I have a sense they'll come out and fight with everything they have, just as they can expect that from us.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you know, yeah, absolutely true, Coach. We're talking about the Falcons and the Carolina Panthers. One more final question, if I may. Coach Quinn, I'd like you to give a shout-out to your two Pro Bowlers, Julio Jones and Alex Mack. And as you do, and I'll say this, you don't have to, but I think that certainly Matt Ryan and I could make an argument for DeMonte Casey, but okay, those guys may have gotten overlooked, but Julio and Alex make it again.
Yeah, and I think always it's a real credit to you know, to the men around them as well. You know, for Julio and Matt, this connection that they have is so strong, and for both of them to do it at such a high level, and Alex included, it really goes to show, you know, the respect that they have during a tough year. They're recognized for the standard at which they operate and they play, and so it's always a tough time because. You know, there's certainly on every team, there's a couple guys that you think are deserving in that particular year. And sometimes it's the next year that that guy gets a chance to make it. And I certainly feel like we had some that will get consideration again in the future, men like Grady Jarrett and KZ and others, because of their ability to play. And let's keep it going with the other two, with Matt included, because they are really playing at a high level.
The good stuff there with Dan Quinn. So you see now, no Devontae Freeman for the rest of the year. Not that we expected him to come back.
Can I make a quick point? I believe that Matt Ryan still will be in the Pro Bowl. I think Aaron Rodgers, he's very banged up and hurt. I think he will play the injury card not to play. I think Matty Ice eventually will be named as an injury replacement.
Or Drew Brees or Jared Goff will be in the Super Bowl and they will not be able to play. We'll come back. It's time to read between the lines with M.O. back in studio.
Yeah, coming up next, give you a couple of minutes to kind of reflect on the DQ interview. Plus, if you missed it from yesterday, Shockley tells you about what it's really like being the backup quarterback and how it affects you in every way possible at the University of Georgia. That's all coming up next. Sports Radio 910 on the game.
All right, we are back on a Falcons Wednesday. Flowery Branch is where we reside right now. Man, we've been loving these Wednesdays, man. Thank you to the Falcons for all the access. We're going to bring in Mark Owens for Read Between the Lines. Top of the hour, we dive into coordinator talk with the Falcons. Marquand Manuel, will he be back? Steve Sarkisian, will he be back? We're going to kick the tires on some other options. Roddy Nabulsi will help us in the dog walk, try to make sense of this Justin Fields thing. Look, Rick Campbell, sports detective, has entered the building, dude. I got questions. I've got conspiracy theories to play. But right now it's Mark Owens' turn, man.
All right, so just heard a great interview with Dan Quinn. I want you guys to reflect on this one, him talking about Julio Jones and Alex Mack making it to the Pro Bowl and how proud he is of his players.
Always, it's a real credit to the men around them as well, you know, for Julio and Matt. This connection that they have is so strong, and for both of them to do it at such a high level, and Alex included, it really goes to show, you know, the respect that they have during a tough year. They're recognized for the standard at which they operate and they play. And so it's always a tough time because, there's certainly on every team, there's a couple guys that you think are deserving in that particular year. And sometimes it's the next year that guy gets a chance to make it. And I certainly feel like we had some that will get consideration again in the future, men like Grady Jarrett and KZ and others, because of their ability to play. And let's keep it going with the other two, with Matt included, because they are really playing at a high level.
And he's right. And remember, with the Pro Bowl, if a team makes the Super Bowl, their player will not represent in the Pro Bowl. Chicago had like seven guys. The Saints had a bunch. The Rams had a bunch. So there is chances with guys pulling out, with guys playing in the Super Bowl, stuff like that, that a Matt Ryan, that a DeMonte Casey, that one of them can end up making the Pro Bowl, and they'd be deservingly so. Boy, Julio's vaulted himself right back. 100 catches, over 1,500 yards, 6 touchdowns. The guy's amazing. And it's nice to see, you know, for him, that he was able to overcome what was the most tumultuous offseason of his career. And it wasn't really tumultuous. It was, I want a correction on my pay. He got it. And then he responds by showing, I'm worth every dime that you gave me.
No doubt. But Dan Quinn said it right there. If you want to get butthurt about Casey and Jared, he said, sometimes you've got to do it and then come back and get the credit the next year. We talk about it all the time. This is not the first time this has happened. It happens in baseball. It happens in the NBA. It happens in the NFL. Casey can't just spike up and have 6 picks and be vaulting over established guys. Now, that's not the case because Eddie Jackson is getting the Pro Bowl nod over DeMonte Casey. And Eddie Jackson, of course, is a young player out of Alabama for the Bears who's making a ton of plays. Eddie Jackson, his plays are impacting winning. And DeMonte Casey's are not. And it's one of those unfair things, John. It's not like Casey isn't doing enough and it's other reasons why we're losing. But you get credit for those wins, man.
Think
about it. Akeem Hicks made it over Grady Jarrett. Mm-hmm. They have a killer defense on a great team. Eddie Jackson made it over DeMonte Casey. Great stats, good year, but a winning team. It's really that simple.
How many did we get the Super Bowl year? We get 5 or 6
Five
Pro
or six,
Bowl?
Something like that, yeah.
You know, I know Matt was in there. I know Julio was in there.
Alex Mack.
Devontae. I don't think Alex Mack made it that year for some reason, because I remember having the conversation. Vic Beasley made it that year. It was 5 or 6 somewhere there, and Mack may have made it. But I know it was a bunch of Falcons, and you're right. They do get rewarded for winning. Our winner is Mark Owens back in the Kia Studio.
Let's keep it in the NFL. Steelers have a real chance at a wild card spot to make it in the playoffs. Ian Rappaport from the NFL Network reported that Ben Roethlisberger is suffering from cracked ribs. Well, Big Ben was on 93.7 in Pittsburgh, and he was not impressed with Rappaport's hot take.
There was a report out there before the game the other day, Ian Rappaport of NFL Network, saying that you had sustained cracked ribs last week.
You shouldn't even say his name on this show, because nothing that comes what he says there's any truth to. I mean, I'll stop you before. I have no idea where that came from. My wife texted me before the game, like, did you hear about this? And I'm in the locker. I'm like, this is unbelievable. I don't know where that guy gets his information from. So we're not even going to give him credence on this show, if that's okay with you.
Mark Owens, thank you. Thank you. Because I think a lot of people are like, wow, Campbell's really going in on this Ian Rappaport guy. See? I'm not lying to y'all. He is a Shinola salesman. He throws the ish against the wall. And, John, a big glob of goo just goes bloop, 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 and it falls off the wall. Now, I will say this. He was right about James Conner. Mm-hmm. We talked about this a lot last week. And I thought the Steelers were playing possum a little bit, and they were going to roll out James Conner. He got in a limited practice on Friday, and then they ruled him out for Sunday's game. So, but again, he gets every once in a while, Rappaport will get something right, but there are so many times that he's wrong. It's like the boy crying wolf, and I don't buy any of his reports. And it's just great to hear Big Ben take him deep like that.
It's funny as hell to hear Big Ben take him deep like that, and what you like about an Adam Schefter is he's right 95-97%
of
the time.
Exactly.
A lot, and I'm not going to say a lot, because Wojnarowski's right a ton in the NBA.
Spot on.
Who was the NBA guy that used to throw out? My sources say.
Chris Sheridan.
Was it Chris Broussard?
Chris Broussard.
Yeah, he would throw a lot of crap to the wall, too.
That's my boy, though.
He still threw a lot of crap to the wall.
All right, I'll give you that. He's my boy, though.
I like Chris
Broussard.
You
get off Chris Broussard,
but,
man.
Hey, if you're wrong, you're wrong. Mark Owens, you're 63% right.
63% of the time, I'm wrong 90% of the time. Let's go back to yesterday, DJ Shockley. A really good in-depth interview, because across Dog Nation, all we're talking about now is Justin Fields out, who's in. And here's Shockley talking about, I was in that situation with David Green, and a little insight on what he had to go through mentally as part of the Bulldogs.
I was in the exact same spot as Justin Fields, as being the number two rated quarterback in the country, had everybody patting on your back, telling you you're going to go play, and it doesn't work out. There were times where I would literally sit in my dorm room, and my roommate was Greg Blue. And at the time, he'd be telling me, oh, you need to be playing. You should be playing. And he would leave, and I would literally have tears in my eyes because I felt this hard, this passionate about playing, and I wanted to be a part of it in some way or somehow, and I wasn't, and it hurt. And for a lot of people who don't know, going through this mentally, physically, it's tough on those guys to have that opportunity kind of taken away and not have it. My ultimate thing was, I'm the only one living this life. And I have to make the right decision for me. Everybody else who says you should do this, you should do that, they're not going to be in the mean. They're not going to walk around with you. They're not going to have to feel the disappointment when you don't play. You have to make the best decision for yourself going through it. And if you don't, if you make it for somebody else, you're going to regret it. And it's not going to be the type of mood you want while you're there.
Very powerful stuff. You know, we've gotten to know Shock really well. I've known Shock 10, 12 years now, or maybe not quite that long, about 8 years. But to hear that story that, you know, a kid that DJ was going through the exact same thing and he decided to stick it out, and it was a different situation back then with the NCAA transfer rules and all of that stuff. But to think about what the kid is going through, and that's where we get lost in this whole scenario. We see Justin Fields, football player. What can he do for our program? How is he being used by Kirby Smart? We don't think of Justin Fields or DJ Shockley, the human being sitting in his dorm room, dreaming about being the starting quarterback and not having the job and what you have to go through. Because you can imagine, your entire family sitting there going, you should leave, you should do this. A girlfriend might be telling you this. Your boys are telling you something else. But Shock said it best. You're the person that has to go through this. You're the person that has to live that life. It's got to be tough for these kids, and you respect whatever decision they're making.
It's just a theory of mine. I don't believe that Justin Fields is being gassed up by Pookie or getting gassed up by his family to leave Georgia. I think that he's a smart kid, and I think he's looking at the writing on the wall. Think about it. What if Jake Fromm wants to be a four-year guy at Georgia mm-hmm. and not leave for the pros after his third year? That means Justin Fields is sitting for 1, 2, 3 years.
Yep.
That ain't going to get him to the NFL. So I think Justin is smart enough to make his own decision here. And on Alex Mack, I was right.
He did make it.
He was on the Pro Bowl team in 2016. It's now four straight Pro Bowls for Alex Mack. 2015, his last year with Cleveland. And all 3 years with the Atlanta Falcons, he has made the Pro
Bowl. Nice. I could have swore one of those years he didn't make it, but I'm glad you're right and I'm
wrong. Four consecutive Pro Bowls for Alex Mack.
And he's the guy that's had to solidify and anchor this offensive line for as long as he's been here. Hey, this April, spend your spring break or vacation on a Royal Caribbean cruise with Atlanta football players Grady Jarrett, Deion Jones, Rico Allen, and Devondre Campbell. Hosting the cruise will be Wes, Drew Ham, and Dave Archer, the Idaho head puncher. Join the Atlanta Falcons radio network. Kick off your season in style. Go to the event page at 929thegame.com and book your vacation today.
A little burp there?
Yeah, a little bit. It just came out. I'm trying to hold it in. Falcons, there's a rumor out there that both coordinators could be gone. We'll talk about who, why, and who could be the replacement. It's coming up next. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and 92.9 The Game.
I'll be there tomorrow, too, in the closet with Mike Bell.
Trapped in the closet?
Did I just say I'll be trapped in the closet with Mike Bell?
Yep.
Yeah, I did.
All right. It could get awkward later today because we are in the closet right now. And it doesn't say on the rundown that we're coming out. So Rick Hamla and John Michaels on a Falcons Wednesday from Flowery Branch. And we're talking coordinators here as Mark Owens plays some unusual music. Mark.
This is R. Kelly's Trapped in the Closet.
I did not know that.
There was, what was there, Mark, 12 songs to this?
Like
it was a 12-part song. Like, literally, he told a story about being trapped in the closet. Originally, it was a guy cheating with a woman, and he was actually trapped in the closet when her husband came. And then it got really weird.
Oh, I'm sure it did. It's R. Kelly. I'm sure it got really weird. Probably from personal experience. John, I am so excited for this conversation right here. Mm-hmm. that song just... I mean... It's like the bed music for a dramatic game show, right? Where they got to, like, think for a minute on the answer. There was a report yesterday that the Falcons might be moving on from both head coordinators, Marquand Manuel, defensive coordinator, and Steve Sarkisian, offensive coordinator. And immediately I was like, no, this isn't Ian Rappaport, is it? To the best of my knowledge, is Tom Pelissero, mm-hmm. who is not one of their top scoopers. Good reporter, good journalist, but not one of their top scoopers. So right. It almost legitimizes it for me that a guy like Tom, like if Jason Lockenfora of CBS would have said it, we'd be like, nah, we're not buying it. Well, we don't really have a book on the scoopage mm-hmm. of Tom Pelissero. So I think there is validity there. Now, John, let's see if we agree on this. If I were Steve Sarkisian, I would be bracing for some bad news. But if I'm Marquand Manuel, I do not think that this team is going to make a tough decision with him.
Yeah, I would tend to agree. Marquand comes from Dan Quinn's coaching tree. Again, he improved the defense a year ago from where it was under Richard Smith in 2016 and Dan Quinn at the end of the year. And then all of a sudden this year that unit was ravaged by injuries, as we all know, and they've taken a step back. Now, what people have said about Marquand Manuel, not you or I, but fans out there that are listening have said, you know, why did we not blitz as much? And I think part of that goes to when you have all these injuries and you're trying to just simply get guys lined up in the right spot, sometimes simplicity is the easiest way to make sure that everybody's going where they're supposed to. And you've noticed the last 3 or 4 weeks, they have been bringing more pressures. They've been getting home with more blitzes. Suddenly they're getting more sacks. I think that's because you've had the same group now basically for 6 or 7, 8, 10 weeks, and guys know where they're supposed to be. You can sub in a Jordan Richards and switch him out with a Sherrod Neesman, and Neesman knows where he's supposed to be coverage-wise. Richards knows where he's supposed to be coverage-wise. And earlier in the year, that wasn't the case. On the offensive side, this group got off to a fire start.
John, just hold that thought 1 second on the offense. So the more blitzing and people complaining about us not blitzing enough. First of all, that is a Dan Quinn philosophy. Mm-hmm. It's not like Marquand Manuel is calling plays exclusive from what Dan Quinn wants him to do.
Right.
But to my knowledge, and Dave Archer can take me deep, somebody, to my knowledge, Marquand Manuel is a conduit between Dan Quinn and the players. Am I right?
I mean,
like it's not like Marquand Manuel, it's not like it's his system. It's Dan Quinn's system.
But in fairness, Marquand is calling the plays. You know, remember, Richard Smith called the plays for 8 weeks, and then you got the reports that Dan Quinn took over play calling.
Yeah.
It's Dan's system, but Marquand calls what he wants. And I've watched Coach Manuel down there on the field a ton. He's drawing stuff. He's coming up with new stuff. He's over there with his Microsoft Surface tablet, and he's looking at film, and he's doing everything, and he's the first on the field. It's Dan's style, but Marquand calls it. So conduit to me is more Dan's running everything, and it just kind of goes through Marquand. Marquand has his imprint on this defense as well. It's still in the philosophy that Dan Quinn wants to run. They want to run that cover 3, rush 4, drop 7 a lot, and try to make you make mistakes.
All right. So in terms of Marquand Manuel, it's Rick and John on a Falcons Wednesday from Flowery Branch. And so let's get to offense in a minute. I want to talk more about this. I was looking at Marquand Manuel, John. He was in an article on NFL.com October 23rd, 2018. Mm-hmm. 2 months ago.
Yep.
2 months ago. He was named in an article of hot NFL coordinators yep. who might become a head coach.
Yep.
2 months ago, and this is NFL.com. This is not some blog coming out of some dude's basement. This is NFL.com. It's legit. 2 months ago, Marquand Manuel mentioned as a potential head coaching candidate. Head coaching candidate. He's going nowhere, guys and girls. He's going nowhere. And in terms of the Dan Quinn and Marquand Manuel thing, let me make this point. And I could be off base here, guys and girls. But Dan Quinn was here with that defensive mindset and to bring defensive grit and defensive production here to Atlanta. Like, why doesn't he call the plays? You know what I mean? Like, you have head coach play callers. Sean Payton calls the plays. Mm-hmm. Mike McCarthy calls the plays. Andy Reid calls the plays. Mm-hmm. Sean McVay calls the plays. Defensively right now, obviously Greg Williams is still calling the plays up in Cleveland. I know he's an interim coach, so it's not a perfect example. Like, there's probably a simple dummy explanation here for your boy Cam, but like, why doesn't Dan Quinn do the play calling? I don't necessarily like that he doesn't do the play calling. That's your forte.
Yeah, I get it. There's a lot of coaches that don't, though. I mean, you've given some examples of guys that did. Mike McCarthy just got fired, and not because of the play calling, just because of general ineffectiveness up there in Green Bay, and that the message had gotten stale. In the NFL, I think a lot more coaches like to have guys under them. It's hard enough to be a head coach in this league. Nevertheless, now I got to figure out how to game plan and call. You're part of the game planning during the week. But on Sunday, I've got 95 other things that I'm trying to worry about, nevertheless trying to call plays every 15 to 20 seconds to get lined up. I think coaches like to have guys, and he trusts Marquand Manuel mm-hmm. to do what he's supposed to do.
Well, here and that's all true, but here's the thing. When he fired or demoted Richard Smith, I can't remember how that transaction went, and Dan Quinn took over the play calling on defense, the defense immediately got a lot better. Like, there was we did the math. It was like an 8 point per game improvement.
Right.
I think they were giving up 28 and they gave up 20 per game after Dan Quinn took over. I'm not calling anybody out. I prefer when you are the defensive genius, the offensive genius, even when you're the head coach, my preference is that guy calls those plays.
And like I said, most coaches do not do that. But DQ, you also got to look at it. Richard Smith wasn't fired during the year. He stayed on the staff through the
right.
Super Bowl, and then they let go of him at the end of the year, and they moved on and decided to go with Marquand Manuel. So I don't know how that transpired in the locker room, how that transpired in the meeting room, how much Richard Smith was doing. He wasn't just sitting off in a room by himself collecting a paycheck. He was still part of mm-hmm. everything. I guess on game day, DQ was the one that was actually going out and calling the plays.
I want to ask Arch about that and just pick his brain about sort of that chain of command and how much of Quinn is going through Marquand on game days and get a ball player's take on that. Are you ready to move to the offensive side?
Yeah, and on the offensive side, you know, the rumor that's out there, and again, this is from Tom Pelissero of NFL Network, Steve Sarkisian could be gone as well, and they've already named a potential target at offensive coordinator in Darrell Bevell.
Yuck.
I'm good on Darrell Bevell.
Me too.
Do we have better weapons than he had in Seattle? Yes. Even at the height of the Seahawks, they never had great weapons on offense. Marshawn Lynch was good. Russell Wilson was good. Doug Baldwin can't hold a candle to Julio Jones. Mm-hmm. So they don't have the weapons that the Falcons would have had back then. But Darrell Bevell, to me, always seemed like an overly conservative coach.
Agreed.
He was a run guy and would throw out a necessity, use the legs of Russell Wilson a lot, which you obviously wouldn't have here in Matt Ryan. I don't see him as an innovative guy. He's not in coaching as far as I can tell this year. He was the Seattle OC back and through last year. He was let go in January of this year.
So, and I agree with that. I'm not feeling the Darrell Bevell rumor that I don't feel like that's a, like an upgrade. I feel like, okay, let's give it a shot with this guy and see what happens. I've got a couple of suggestions here. Mm-hmm. And these aren't, I'm not super convicted about these, John. I just think that they're options, and
right.
I want to throw them out there and get them out into the conversation. How about Dirk Cutter? Dirk Cutter is about to get fired by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Most likely.
Dirk Cutter, so this is his little coaching track record here. with Tampa Bay. This year they're 5-8. Last year 5-11. The year before they were 9-7, I think. The year before that he was Tampa Bay's offensive coordinator, and then he ascended to head coach. So in 2014, 13, and 12, he was the Falcons' offensive coordinator. Mm-hmm. 2012, you go to the NFC Championship game. Then you come back 4-12. Then you come back 6-10, and everybody was gutted, and he went to Tampa Bay. By all accounts, good or great relationship with Matt Ryan, right? Mm-hmm. Like they get along. They did very well together. I don't see any dysfunction there. And you say, well, he's, you know, the head coach of a crappy team. He's about to get fired. Look, tons of injuries. Their defense sucked. They fired their defensive coordinator, didn't they?
I believe so. Mike Smith.
Mike Smith.
I got fired.
This is where Cutter has the Tampa Bay Buccaneers offense this year. Number three overall in the NFL. Number three. 416.6 yards per game. And it has been a yo-yo at quarterback all year. Fitzpatrick, Jameis Winston. And they have the number one pass offense in the league, 318.9 yards per game. So you're telling me that his play calling is getting it done with Fitz, Jameis, DeSean Jackson, Adam Humphries, obviously a stud in Mike Evans, obviously a stud in O.J. Howard. So why couldn't he come here and replicate those numbers and have us back at the top of overall offense and overall passing offense with Matt, Julio, Calvin, Sanu, Hoop, and backs that can catch the rock, right?
Now, in fairness, they do have an offensive coordinator there who's actually calling the plays. It's not it could be, again, much like Dan Quinn, Todd Monken, I believe, is the name of the offensive coordinator there. And he called plays for.
Are you sure?
Yeah, because in game one, when they put up 48 points, they said it was his first time calling plays or first time calling plays for Tampa Bay. He said this: I was excited. I was kind of numb. When it goes down like that, you're a little numb. You have to wake up. I'm serious. It doesn't happen very often. You react to it. Blah blah blah. He said all the things you worked on. You're going, boy, this is fun, and you're relieved. You are just because you put into that. Now, Monken did credit a lot to Dirk Cutter, who made the decision to hand over play calling duties to him. So Cutter had called plays, and I like Dirk Cutter. When he was here, 2012, when the Falcons were healthy, their offense was flying. You're going to take more shots down the field than you did potentially this year with Steve Sarkisian, but I like what Dirk Cutter brought. I like the way that they ran the football back then. I like the way that they threw the football. The next year when Michael Turner was gone, it turned into Steven Jackson and injuries and everything else. The offense kind of took a dive. I like Dirk Cutter, but this year is not all just him.
But, you know, like you say with Dan Quinn, his system, he's heavily involved in game planning. And if he came here, he would obviously be the head coach of the offense.
Right.
And so, again, I'm not saying we have to get Dirk Cutter. I'm just putting it out there. A couple other names. Eric Bieniemy. He is the offensive coordinator for the Chiefs right now. And obviously Andy Reid is the play caller. And I love that he does that this far in his career. He's like, I'm not a CEO coach. I'm a play caller. And a damn good one at that until the stakes get really high. And then he turtles up a little bit. But Eric Bieniemy, you know, former NFL guy, big time college running back. That name interests me because of the Andy Reid coaching tree. Another name, John DeFilippo, who was just fired by the Vikings. So this guy helped the Philadelphia Eagles beat the Goats in the Super Bowl in the most yards racked up, I believe, in any NFL game of all time in that Super Bowl with the Eagles and the Patriots. He was scapegoated, I think, John. And I don't know if there was personality stuff. John, I can't speak to that. But he was scapegoated by Mike Zimmer for a flagging underachieving offense. But you've got Dalvin Cook injured for most of the year. You've got a ragtag offensive line that's been hit with wrecking ball after wrecking ball, kind of like ours. So he wasn't dealt a full hand to play with this year. And so it fails. Like, are you serious? You're going to fire a guy that you just hired, a hotshot coordinator? You're going to fire him about halfway through his first year on the job?
Right.
You want to talk about overreactionary? So John DeFilippo would be a name that I'd be okay with them maybe interviewing him if they make a tough decision here with Steve Sarkisian.
I got a feeling he ends up back in Philadelphia. That's just my gut feeling. He's going to go back there. Things haven't been right in Philly.
Are you mad at him?
To go back to Philly?
No. I mean, are you down on John DeFilippo?
No. You put $84 million in Kirk Cousins. You get what you deserve.
Have you seen him? I mean, the choke artistry?
Yeah, he's a great early regular season guy. He's going to get into the playoffs if they weasel their way in, and they're going to be out in the first round.
Mm-hmm.
He's forgot to throw to Adam Thielen the last 7 weeks of the season. Just forgot he's there.
He's not running like he used to. Remember the gritty, gutty white guy running for touchdowns? That's gone. He got paid, and that's gone.
Roddy Nabolsi going to join us next. We'll talk to him about the latest with Justin Fields and how are the Dogs doing on early signing day. Let me give you a hint. Really good. It's coming up next. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and 92.9 The Game.
And that's Dan Walken, and he broke this news that Justin Fields is, you know, at least officially the report is he's exploring the possibility of transferring. The NCAA added him to the transfer portal yesterday, which allows other teams to contact Justin Fields and perhaps woo him to their schools. And right now on the WadeFord.com hotline on a Falcons Wednesday from Flowery Branch on the Midday Show with Rick and John, we welcome Roddy Nabolsi. He is the publisher of UGASports.com. Roddy, good morning.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
We're doing great. Thanks for joining us. And, you know, conspiracy theories abound with this kind of stuff. And John and I have been kind of connecting the dots. You've got the, you know, the flip with Ohio State. You've got Justin Fields with this transfer portal. You've got reports that already that Ohio State is the front runner to come in and get Justin Fields to follow up Dwayne Haskins. Roddy, bottom line, and we'll talk about a lot of angles here, but bottom line, do you think Justin Fields will be a Buckeye next year?
I imagine he'll either be a Buckeye or a Sooner. I could see him maybe going out to Oklahoma and joining the Oklahoma Sooners, maybe playing with five-star Jaden Hazelwood. Those two are very tight. They really want an offense that, you know, kind of spread, opens it up, makes the most use of their talent. So I'm not saying that he does, but I'm just saying I could see it. The only problem with going to Oklahoma is that they're going to have a kid out there, maybe the number one quarterback in the nation, a kid named Rattler. So if he's looking to get a better depth chart, then I don't know that Oklahoma is the spot. But it would not shock me at all to see him wind up at Ohio State.
Roddy, you're closer to the program than we are. When were the seeds planted for Justin Fields to transfer? Was this an early season thing, a mid-season thing, or is it something that just kind of built over time?
To me, it was a mid-season thing. When I'd probably go back maybe to that Florida game when he didn't get in. He was just not used the way he expected to be used. I'm not saying that he was promised playing time or any certain packages, but when he came and saw that you know, he went head-to-head with Jake Fromm. Jake Fromm beat him out. And that is mainly because, and this is not a shot at Justin, it's just what Kirby Smart and Jim Chaney like to run is a pro-style offense where Jake Fromm has protection. He makes one read. If that's not there, he dumps down to a tight end or a tailback, and they run the ball a lot. That's just not the best offense for Justin Fields. So he's looking for an offense that fits his style of play better, and that's just not what he's getting at Georgia. And I guess midway through the season, it kind of dawned on him that they're not going to change this offense. It is incredibly successful. We're scoring 40, 50, 60 points a game. Why am I here? So I think it was midway through the season. That's not to say he's discontent. It's just he wants to play, and he's not going to unseat Jake Fromm in the near future, so he needs to go elsewhere.
Yeah, I mean, and we're all with this decision. I love free agency in pro sports. I'd like more free agency in college sports because it favors the kids as opposed to the NCAA and or the institutions. And I'm all about the kids, Roddy. We've got Roddy Nabolsi on the WadeFord.com hotline. He is the publisher of UGASports.com. I love John's question. And as he was asking it and you were answering it, I'm like, I think I know the answer here. And I'm like raising my hand because I think, and you're making a great point about the Florida game, Roddy, and him not even getting in. But how about the LSU game? The LSU game is a game where he does not throw a pass. He runs one time. This is a game that the Dogs, of course, lost by 20. This is a game where Jake Fromm had his worst game of the year. 16 of 34, a TD and two picks. Like, if there was ever an opportunity, you know, to go to the bullpen for the flamethrower, that was the game. So for him to impact the box score to the tune of one run and 3 yards in a 20-point L at LSU in Jake Fromm's worst game of the year, I think that had to have Justin Fields feeling some kind of way. Are you with me?
Yeah, I could definitely see that. You know, he probably walked off that field going, look, the other guy wasn't going to get done. I should have gone in. And it wasn't, but a few games prior to that, that Kirby Smart had mentioned when he brought in Justin Fields, he said, look, we brought him in for a change of pace. Well, you definitely needed a change of pace in that LSU game. But you got to remember, with Kirby Smart, he is a conservative defensive coach. What he was seeing in his starting quarterback and his starting offensive line and his running backs, none of them were getting the job done. Dave Aranda had drawn up a defense that had, you know, his best quarterback when it came to a analysis standpoint, confused. They had no idea what was happening out there. The stunts and twists the defensive line were running were just blowing past the Georgia's offensive front. And the last thing you want to do is to throw a guy in there with even less experience. I think from the Kirby standpoint, it would have been like feeding Justin to the wolves. So, but Justin's not going to see that. He's going to walk away going, look, you know, nothing was working. Put me in, coach. Let me try to do something. You know, four quarters of ineffectiveness. Let's try something different. And that didn't happen. And to come out of that, the next five games after that LSU game, Georgia's on fire. Jake Fromm looks fantastic coming out of that the tail end of the season there, really cementing himself as the starter. He looked terrible in that game. It was his worst game. You know, the kid felt horrible. But, you know, he said, look, this isn't going to happen again. And all of a sudden, Jake Fromm, the last half of the season, one of the best quarterbacks statistically in the nation. So it's I can see how that game could be not only a frustration for Justin Fields, but a kickstart for Jake Fromm that made it even harder for Justin Fields to see the field.
We've got Roddy Nabalsi with us here. He of UGASports.com on Sports Radio 92.9. The game. Roddy, how much culpability in this is there with Kirby Smart? Because me, as a person just watching the game, I felt there were times it was so obvious when Justin Fields came in what it was going to be. It was going to be quarterback run or zone read, and that was it. Do you feel Kirby Smart, if he could redo this, would have given Justin Fields maybe an open canvas when he actually came in the game?
Yes, I think if they had to start back, you're looking at that UMass game or you know, starting right off at the beginning. It's like, look, don't do what you did before. That's just a poor idea. Bring him in for one play. Everybody on the field knows what's going to happen. If I'm Justin Fields, maybe I feel like, I don't say he was sabotaged, but you're not giving the kid a chance. If he walks out there on, you know, third down and you know he's going to run it just because the defense is expecting a pass, the defense adjusts. He tries to read the defensive end. The defensive end is playing that midfielder, if you will. He's not committing one way or the other. What's Justin supposed to do? And then all of a sudden, boom, he's out, and that was his one chance to get the job done. I just think that Kirby went way too conservative with this. And in the games where you were actually winning and you brought Justin Fields in just to hand the ball off, no, let him open it up. So you saw what he could do in that UMass game where he scored three touchdowns. When you let him play more, let's see more of that throughout the entirety of the season instead of – and even if you're winning. And here's the thing. I hate a blowout. I hate to see a team that's already down by three or four touchdowns, you know, have another team go up, you know, the team that's beating them, add on two, three more touchdowns. But if you want your, you know, five-star quarterback to develop, maybe you got to open up the playbook a little bit and not tell everybody or telegraph what he's going to do when he comes into the stadium.
Hey, Roddy, really appreciate you keeping it real. I feel like a lot of dog fans and a lot of dog journalists don't keep it real. And it's just like trumpeting, you know, the party line. And I just wanted to give you that compliment. Roddy Nabalsi, publisher of UGASports.com. I'm with your boys, Rick and John, throwing our midday party here live from Flowery Branch on a Falcons Wednesday. So, according to reports, Justin Fields and his family are expected to retain attorney Tom Mars, who helped Shea Patterson win his NCAA appeal last offseason and paved the way for him to play in Michigan and get everybody's hopes up before they choked once again against Ohio State. But and John and I think that the NCAA will grant Justin Fields his appeal and he will be able to play ball in 2019, presumably for Ohio State. What's your take on that piece of this? Do you think that Justin Fields is going to be able to get that clearance from the NCAA?
Yes. I don't even think it'll be much of an issue. I think he'll get it pretty quick. Thomas Mars is the best at it. I think he's the one that really leaked this whole thing. I know a lot of people have conspiracy theories about, you know, Tennessee, Florida, Alabama, all of Georgia's rivals having put this news out there. But I think Thomas Mars was contacted by the Fields family, and that's how the information leaked out. And that's just my opinion. The last thing I'm going to do is accuse a lawyer of anything. But that's a guy that I think that's where it happened. And he's very good at it. He understands what's going on. The NCAA, the last thing they want to do is, be accused of the antitrust stuff that's going around. You know, the players are being treated more and more like employees and less like students because they're making the schools a ton of money. And when a kid can come to you and say, look, you prohibiting me from playing is affecting my pro potential, that in years past that had zero resonance with the NCAA. But now as the fan base is changing and all these individual institutions are seeing the writing on the wall, you know, the NCAA is made up of all these presidents. They're like, hey, the more and more we restrict them, the tighter and tougher this is going to become to keep this system in place. So if you've got one thing you can hang your hat on, one issue, one instance, one incident that was handled poorly in any way, shape, or form, I think the NCAA is actually looking for an excuse to let you play early. Whereas in the past, it didn't matter what happened. You had to sit out because they didn't want, you know, just rampant, wild free agency amongst the college football players. But that sentimentality is changing a lot. You know, they're coming more and more towards seeing it from the player's point of view, you know, keeping the rule in place. But if you have anything you can appeal with, we're going to rubber stamp it and let you play.
Roddy, George, obviously with National Signing Day, the part one today, early signing period, in and getting a lot of guys inked, but I just saw Noah Kane has decided, four-star running back, to commit to Penn State. Three guys that I have Georgia ties to that may have interest in the Dogs. Tyreek Stevenson, you also have Trey Sanders and Jaden Hazelwood, who you talked about. Do you have any latest updates on those three guys?
Well, with Jaden Hazelwood, he's not going to announce until the 5th. Same with Tyreek Stevenson. Hazelwood, the five-star wide receiver, the number two wide receiver in the nation. You know, local kid, was committed to Georgia for a long time, I think a year. Decommitted, has been looking around. Really wants to play with Justin Fields, but I think he winds up playing for Georgia, and he will announce at the All-America game out in Texas on January 5th. Tyreek Stevenson, a four-star, very highly ranked defensive back out of Miami, he too will announce at the All-American game on January 5th. So two of Georgia's top targets are going to announce at that game, and right now I'm predicting both of those guys to go to Georgia, although, you know, Hazelwood is he's a tough he's a tough read sometimes. The kid keeps his own counsel. The last one, Trey Sanders, the number one running back in the nation out of IMG Academy down in Florida. I think just about everyone in the industry to this day had picked Georgia as his landing spot. He's supposed to announce after 1 o'clock on ESPN. I no longer predict him to land at the University of Georgia. I think he's going somewhere else. Keep an eye on Alabama in this situation, but I do not think that Trey Sanders goes to Georgia today.
Roddy, super quick, yes or no answer. Is Elijah Holyfield a Dog next year?
Yes.
Roddy, great stuff as always, man. Make sure you check out his writing, UGASports.com. We'll catch up with you down the road. Hey, when we get back, the college football cheat sheet. We'll dive into more on Justin Fields. Also, Missouri gets another quarterback? What? Talk about that on Sports Radio.
The Game.
And the College Football Cheat Sheet is brought to you by R.S. Andrews. Keep cool. Get an R.S. Andrews Precision AC Tune-Up. Another way they make you smile at rsandrews.com. It is Rick Kamla. It is John Michaels. We got PB, the Preacher Man, out here as well. Mark Owens behind the glass in our Kia Studios. And we're here on a Falcons Wednesday, Flowery Branch at Falcons headquarters. Dave Archer at the top of the hour. Falcons player in the 1 o'clock hour. And, John, as we get back into the Justin Fields conversation, what we know right now, nothing is confirmed yet. It is still just a report. Family members said we're not ready to make a decision or an announcement yet. He's practicing with the team, according to reports. According to reports, he will play in the Sugar Bowl, exploring the possibility of transferring, appealing to the NCAA to play next year. Mm-hmm. Ohio State's been listed as the front runner. Florida State and Oklahoma also have been mentioned. And his last play with the Dogs was the fake punt. Are you kidding me? Anyway, I want to go back to the bowl game. If Justin Fields is appealing to the NCAA to transfer, presumably to Ohio State or maybe Oklahoma, why in the hell would he play in the Sugar Bowl and subject himself to injury that could foil all of those plans?
Why would Georgia play him in the Sugar Bowl? Period. I'll be honest, and he put his name into the transfer portal. That is fact. His
yep.
name is in there to transfer. If I'm Kirby Smart, I go, you want to transfer? See you. Go ahead and turn your stuff in. It's been awesome knowing you. figure out where you're going from here. I don't need you on the practice field taking reps from somebody that could potentially play. I would not play you in the Sugar Bowl. You would no longer be part of the program. DJ Shockley told us yesterday when he was on with us, he said he explored transferring before they played in the Sugar Bowl against Florida State. And he said until he made the decision to actually stay at Georgia, he wasn't going to play. He wasn't going to be a part of anything. And he said the best thing that he did, and you can hear the entire interview at 92.9thegame.com, he said once he got to New Orleans and realized I'm still part of this and we're in the Sugar Bowl, and granted it was 13 years ago and the Sugar Bowl was seen with a little bit higher regard than it is today because there were no college football playoffs at that time. It was just the BCS. He said it was the best decision he made. If Justin's leaving, and it sounds like he is, and I know the family's still playing coy, you've already signed transfer papers, bye-bye. I'm sorry. It's time to move on and go about life without Justin Fields at your program.
So I read an article on Dog Nation, and they said something to the effect of it's hard to blame Kirby Smart for the transfer of Justin Fields. And I don't agree with that. I definitely don't agree with that. Now, Jake Fromm beat out Justin Fields.
Yes.
Period. And so there's no crying and sour grapes about that. However, to me, the fact that Kirby Smart and Jim Chaney obviously did not trust Justin Fields.
Correct.
If they would have trusted Justin Fields, the entire playbook would have been available when they played Justin Fields. Mm-hmm. That obviously was not the case. As you said, it's read option. It's basic, simple stuff. Let's not have the rook, the fresh, beat us. Okay? So Justin Fields, like, you guys don't trust me. You know, I'm going into battle here with one hand tied behind my back. It'd be like if we're doing radio and we got somebody in our ear feeding. That's a bad example. But I do think that there's culpability on Kirby Smart for Justin Fields transferring. We said all year long, this was an opportunity to do this with Fields. This was an opportunity here to do this with Fields. But they never did it. Well, they rarely did it, I would say.
Well, I put a College Football Scoop up, and you can find it on our social media outlets, at 92.9 The Game, on Facebook and stuff like that. And I do the little short videos. And I asked late yesterday, who is to blame in this? And I think there's blame a little bit everywhere. Kirby Smart absolutely has culpability in this. You knew when you brought Justin Fields in what he was being brought in for. Today, and I brought up a couple of stats, Rick, and I don't know if you heard them yesterday. 19 five-star quarterbacks by 247 Composite Sports since 2011. Just take a guess how many have transferred out of those 19.
19 There's since 2011?
2011.
I'll say 12.
11 have transferred. That's insane.
Five stars.
Every year since 2010, either the number one or number two quarterback in the country has transferred. Think about that for a second. So when these kids come in, what are they expecting? You've promised me all along, I'm going to play. And I get it. The coach is saying, you're going to compete. That's what they tell us. You're sitting in a living room with a kid. You're going to be my guy. You're going to go win this job. You know how that – and it's not just Kirby. I'm not banging on – Nick Saban does it. Mark Richt does it. Willie Taggart does it. Your boy Bill Snyder does it. They all do it. Jim Harbaugh, except he doesn't have a quarterback that can play usually. They walk in and say, you're going to be my guy. And when this kid, Justin Fields, or insert five-star quarterback, walks on campus, he expects to be the guy. In high school, he was the rave of the world. He was the greatest thing since sliced bread. Then all of a sudden you get on campus, you realize that the upperclassman in front of you, he might be better than you are. And you don't win the job. So Kirby's got culpability. Justin Fields has a little culpability in this. A, you knew walking in, you were going into a battle with a guy that just went to a national title game. I said back in spring, Justin Fields would not win this job. I said back in spring, this would not be a split quarterback job. It was going to be Jake Fromm until Jake Fromm screwed up. And he never screwed up. He became a better player. So Justin Fields knew that walking in. To turn around and walk away immediately, I'm not mad at the kid. It's his business. He wants to make the decision that's best for him to go to the NFL. You should have done that a year ago and looked around and said, I don't have to go somewhere where there's a true freshman quarterback who's going to be here for at least two more years as a starting quarterback.
That's John Michaels. I'm Rick Kamla on a Falcons Wednesday. It's our college football cheat sheet. We're talking about Justin Fields. John, I think in Justin Fields' heart of hearts, when he made the decision to go to Georgia, I think that staying home was a factor in this. Mm-hmm. He had options, ladies and gentlemen. He was being recruited reportedly by Florida State, Florida, Alabama, and Auburn. Mm-hmm. And he selected Georgia. So I think staying home was a factor for Justin.
Yep.
And I also think that he thought he could handle it. And I'm not saying the quarterback competition. I think he battled well with Fromm, and Fromm just beat him out fair and square. Mm-hmm. But I think he thought he could handle being on the sideline and waiting his turn.
Right.
And then he got into that life, and it was really uncomfortable for him. Zach Klein did a great job of tweeting out video of Justin Fields walking off the football field after the South Carolina game, essentially joking with a teammate that all I did was hand the ball off.
Yep.
And he used there was a swear word or two in there too.
At least two.
So it's a short little glimpse of him being frustrated with his role. And that was the South Carolina game. That mm-hmm. wasn't the LSU game or the Florida game. That was the second game of the season. So I think he thought he could handle it and then got in it and was like, no, I don't like this. I want out.
Hey, you know why? Because from the time he was probably 7 or 8 years old, he was the best player on the field.
Oh, no doubt. In the city, probably.
Yeah, he's the best kid. And now all of a sudden you get somewhere and you're not. He lost out to a better quarterback. That's the bottom line. Jake Fromm is a star. Anybody that thinks differently hasn't watched a lot of college football. The guy's a star. He's made 2 5-star quarterbacks transfer. Jacob Eason left.
Good call.
Because he knew he wasn't going to beat out Jake Fromm.
Who would you rather have in the NFL, Kyle Shermer or Jake Fromm?
Jake Fromm.
Who would you rather have in the NFL, Drew Lock or Jake Fromm?
Jake Fromm.
Me too.
Drew Lock's got the tools. Jake Fromm has the goods on the field.
Jake Fromm is a way better sideline thrower than Drew Lock. Way better.
I would argue Drew Lock probably has a better overall arm if you just stand there and throw the football. Jake Fromm makes NFL throws, though. Drew Lock sometimes looks like a deer in headlights.
Does Drew Lock have the it factor to you?
No, not at all.
To me, he lacks the it factor. He's just a quarterback. Jake Fromm has the it factor. Mm-hmm. And so part of this too, John, like maybe Justin Fields thought about being patient another year and then Fromm goes pro. What if Fromm doesn't want to go pro after his third year? What if Fromm wants to be a 4-year quarterback like Aaron Murray? Then Justin Fields is sitting for 3 years. That math doesn't work.
If that NCAA waiver, in my estimation, was not part of this, Justin Fields is still a Georgia quarterback. Because if not...
Say that again?
If the NCAA waiver was not a part of this equation, Justin Fields is still a Georgia quarterback.
What NCAA waiver?
The one that we've been talking about, where he can get the hardship.
Appeal?
Yeah, the hardship
waiver.
Okay,
you threw me off with waiver. Okay.
That's what it's called. It's called a hardship waiver.
You're saying if he did not have that card to play,
he'd still be at Georgia.
Yeah,
because
I agree.
You transfer, it's a year sitting and not playing any football.
No doubt. I'm with
and
you.
Then going in. So, yeah, I think he would have stuck around. Hey, 92.9 The Game is home for all your Atlanta football game day coverage. Coverage starts 4 hours before kickoff with the Wade Ford Tailgate Show. Get ready for some football with 92.9 The Game. Arch will join us next. We're going to talk to him about the Falcons, the Pro Bowl, and maybe a little college football as well. Get into all that next. Dave Archer on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.